This podcast is a Uniting Heart and Soul production. Hello and welcome back to Filthy Hope, a podcast from Uniting Heart and Soul in Wallara, where we dive into the grey spaces where Jesus, life and culture intersect. I'm your host, Jonty Cornford, Creative Director at Uniting Heart and Soul, and joining me, of course, this week is the Reverend Vanessa Williams-Henke, Senior Pastor at Uniting Heart and Soul. This week we're wrapping up our series about intimacy and sexuality by talking about the wild world of dating. This is a topic that we couldn't avoid in this series, and we know that you've been waiting for us to talk about it, so here it is. As usual, a swearing warning does apply, and we do talk about some sensitive topics here and there. We hope you've been enjoying these episodes, and we look forward to returning to this series at some point in the future. We had to record this episode on Zoom, which is why some of the audio quality isn't as good, so we apologise if that's an issue. Enjoy the episode, and I'll see you on the other side. G'day, Ness. How you doing?
Hey, Jonty. This is different.
Yeah, we're not in the studio. It's a bit weird.
I know. I call it snot cam.
Yeah, it's a bit different. So if there's any weird lags or we cut each other off in this podcast, it's because we're doing it on Zoom and there's a slight delay, but we'll see what happens.
At least you're not going to get my runny nose and coffee throat.
Yeah, exactly.
So
we are going to be wrapping up our series on intimacy and sexuality by talking about dating and maybe a little bit of purity culture in there as well, which I'm really excited about because I think we've been circling around this topic the entire series because dating is kind of at the heart of where a lot of these things occur in our lives, dating and relationships. So I'm really excited to dive into this.
I've had to dive into the archives of my memory bank on dating horror stories, Jonty, and they're not good. So you need to put up the warning sign and say that warning thing that you say about, you know, may offend, because my dating horror stories are exactly that. They're straight out of a bad movie.
Yeah, I feel like we almost might need to put up a cringe warning as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh gosh. Yeah. Even just thinking back to some of my experiences as a teenager was pretty horrific for me to relive some of those stories. So.
Oh, I know.
We'll see what happens. But first, before we do that, of course, we've got to do Vent Central. So, Ness, you're up for Vent Central. Play the music.
Yep.
So, Ness, what's been giving you the shits recently?
Soldier on with Condrill. Soldier on. Do you remember that ad? Soldier on
no.
with Condrill. Soldier on. You know, it was that before COVID, it was all about soldiering on with Condrill. And if you could take a bit of Condrill, your snot would suck right back up into your nose and you can just continue going to work and it's not going to be a problem whatsoever. Just pop a couple of Condrill, baby, and get yourself off to work and stop whinging your freaking head off, you know. That's how it kind of went. Then COVID comes along and then you get crook and you go off and have your PCR test and it comes back saying, no, you don't have Condrill. You don't have COVID. You've just got a dodgy virus. You pop off to the doctor because you feel like crap. And the doctor says, great, you don't have COVID, but you've just got a dodgy virus. However, if it turns green or yellow or with some substance, come back and see me and I can give you an antibiotic. But in the meantime, soldier on with Codrell, soldier on. Bum, bum. Well, I'm just here to tell you that the fucking world does not want us to soldier on, Jonty, because hacking coughing and blowing your nose with tissues in public is like having leprosy in 70 AD, my friend.
Yeah, yeah.
It is dodgy AF. And I am so embarrassed. I have this massive hacking cough and I feel like I've got bloody an STD on show. I feel so embarrassed. And people in public turn and look at you and give you the evil glare. And if I've got to blow my nose and push out all the goop that's going on, that it's even a worse look. I am just, it's awful. I hate being sick. It gives me the shit.
Yeah.
Central, play the music.
I have this weird thing where when I drink cold drinks, if I drink them too quickly, I get this little tightness in the throat and I have to cough. Mm-hmm. And with COVID, in a post-COVID world, if I even just a little clearing of the throat, half cough thing in public, everyone looks at you like, get away from me.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Leper.
So I totally, I get that.
Bad, mate. It's really bad. I couldn't go and teach SRE today because the school won't have me. Like, I'm not contagious. I've got like a bloody good old-fashioned head cold, and it's not green, and it's been going on for, I'm now up to about 8 days, and I can't even go into school with this where I am right now. So, you know, just anyway, I'm sick of it.
Yeah, it's a pain.
Yeah.
So let's dive in. Now, to sort of frame this, there's lots of really, really interesting church, quote-unquote, opinions on the purpose of dating. And I'm curious because I have had experiences with Christian teaching, Christian authority, speaking into what dating is for, like what the end goal is. And I'm curious, I want to ask you, as someone who has, as listeners will know, had a very different church history to me. Have you ever heard or experienced the church speaking into what dating is for, or like how Christians should approach dating, or is it just not even a thing for you?
Definitely was never a thing for me. I think for the boys that I dated, the end game for a date with a boy was to get their cock sucked. So that was the end game. You know, that was considered a good date if, you know, they got to, you know, the box of tissues in the back of the car got used, you know. I mean, gross. But no, I had absolutely no knowledge of what the church thought or their view on dating was whatsoever in my growing up. I just wanted to come out of it alive and not pregnant. I think that was my end game.
Mm. So in complete contrast to that, I was told by a few different sources growing up, and not all like uniformly the same advice, but it tended to be date with the intent of marriage. Don't date flippantly. Don't just date because you want like someone and you want to get to know them better. If you're dating someone, it's because the end goal is you want to get married and then you want to have kids and then you want to buy a house together and then you want to have, you know, drop roots in the community as a part of the church community. And this wasn't specific. I'm not throwing my home church under the bus here because I'm not saying this is the church, capital C's, stance on this, but this is like individuals speaking into my life as a teenager. I was told
certainly don't do anything that might lead to anything under the pants or anything horizontal. It's all intentional date to get married. And just for people that are listening and not watching, I'm watching Ness's face reacting to this.
I'm kind of waiting for you to play some funny music and then you say to me, I'm only joking, Ness. But you're deadly serious, man.
No, I'm deadly serious. It's not that weird of a thing for Christians to talk about dating that way. And also, I want to be clear, I'm not telling you this to be like, and this is terrible, because I know plenty of people that have gotten married to the only person that they've dated and then they're in happy marriages and that's gone really well for them. Great. But part of this is to do with something we've spoken about before on this podcast, which is purity culture and where that links in with, you know, dating for dating's sake can lead to unwanted, quote unquote, or unnecessary sexual activity, whether it be actual sexual activity or anything in the lead up to that. Therefore, you lose your purity and therefore your potential marriage partner, you've lost the one thing that is important for that relationship, which sounds absurd, right? To me.
I feel burdened with shame just hearing that, because that's so not my experience. If I put that set of glasses onto my upbringing and what I was taught about dating, then I'm just one shameful whore, basically. That's how it makes me feel, because it's really sad that our childhoods were so incredibly different. I don't really know what I think of all of that. I think my own dating experience and growing up was, it's all I knew, Jonty. And I often think about young couples that I marry in the church, Christian couples that I marry, and I've done lots of that now that I'm a minister. I just am. And when I do the premarital counseling with them, I am just in awe of how they find each other and fall in love with each other. And they're the only people that they've ever had sex with, if they've even had sex at that point before they're married. Many of them haven't. And I sit there in awe and wonder at how different their experience to me was. Yeah, it blows my mind. It really does. I think a part of me is actually quite jealous of the fact that you've had that pure, beautiful upbringing. Part of me feels quite jealous about that. And then another part of me thinks, oh my God, how the hell did you survive in that, brother?
Well, worth saying that that's what I was told. It's certainly not necessarily what I did, which we can get into as we tell some horror stories about dating. But I think as well, it's interesting that, like, regardless of, like, I think we are pretty closely aligned in terms of our values and our opinions about this sort of thing. But for people that aren't, and this, I think this happens in a lot of other areas, not just around dating, but just anything to do with theology and biblical teaching. As soon as there's disagreement, there's this implicit understanding that people that don't agree with you have it wrong, as opposed to people can have different opinions that are both biblically sound. And I think that comes from a place of deep insecurity, because, you know, if you're wrong about this one thing and you have to reconsider something that you have built your entire faith on, then what's to say that the rest of your faith can be changed as well? And I think that is scary to people. And I think that's where some of this, not aggressive, but more confrontational disagreement comes from. So I try to empathize with people that disagree with me on whatever it is, but especially when we're talking about sexual ethic and dating and purity and all of these things. Because it comes from a good place, ultimately.
I think it does come from a good place, people that have what I'd call an extreme view on dating. And can you give me an example of that so then I can comment on that? So what would that look like in today's society?
Sure. Well, I think I can. Oh, gee, I don't know if I should name and shame them. There's a YouTube channel that me and some friends used to watch semi-ironically and sort of laugh and cringe at. That was all about Christian dating advice. And this is a married couple who dated for 3 months or something and then got married, which if you found the right person and you know that you're going to marry them, all power to you. Like that's amazing. But saying things like you should know within 2 to 3 months if you're going to marry the person, and if you're going to marry them, you better well marry them, and if not, you better dump them, because what's the point if you're just going to stick around and mess around with each other for a couple of years and then not get married? You may as well just pull the plug on it now and find the next person so you can test out to see if you're going to marry them or not. And that and that these people would have biblical backing for their opinion, which is great. And they're secure in their theology with that. And that's fantastic. But I disagree pretty strongly. For example, and you just have to scroll through the comments under their videos to see Christians just absolutely going hell for leather and calling each other awful things and throwing the Bible around like it's a weapon. And it never ends well. Yeah.
Wow.
We can link some of those videos if people are interested. And I'm not trying to name and shame these people, because it's not like they're a minority or anything.
I think it's interesting, you know, I think just in my own family, I'll talk about Rob and I. Rob was married before I met Rob. We were both really young, but Rob had been married before he married me. And so he'd clearly dated his first wife, you know, for years, and they'd been married for a couple of years before we were married, before we got married. And I had dated lots of different boys before I married Rob. But I think it's quite a beautiful thing. We'd actually only been in each other's company for about 4 weeks when we knew that there was something deeply special there on a holiday when I was in the US. And then we wrote to each other for 9 months, and then Rob came to Australia, and 10 days later we got engaged. So we'd only actually been in each other's company, physical presence, for about 6 entire weeks in that time, and then we got engaged. So that idea of you know when you know, I believe that. That's for me, that's a thing. I just knew that Rob was my guy, and that was going to be how that played out. But I wonder if Rob felt that about Bonnie when he married her, that she was the one then, you know? I mean, they were each other's first love, and he probably thought that she was the one for him back then, you know? But that didn't end up to be a thing, because Bonnie went off and shagged Ronnie, you know? Bonnie and Ronnie, they sound like two chihuahuas, don't they?
Sounds like a sitcom. But I guess, and what I would then add into that is your experience of, let's call it dating, because that's essentially what it was, dating Rob before you got engaged. I know that you wouldn't then assume that that has to be everyone's experience of dating, right? Absolutely.
I was going on a holiday, and I had a route on a holiday, Jonty, just to keep it, you know, call it for how, I don't want to Cinderella coat this. I had a boyfriend home in Australia, and I had holiday sex, mate. I wasn't going away to have holiday sex, but he was so hot. Have you seen Rob? I mean, I'm telling you, man. Sorry, Jonty.
Sexy man.
He was hot as. You know, it wasn't.
Yeah.
It was just a thing. It just happened. A couple of tequilas, too many, you know, shots of that stuff, and, you know, it's all over, Red Rover.
Yeah. But I guess my point here being that, like, it's really unhelpful to be prescriptive about, well, my experience of dating and my interface with faith in that experience is the only way that that happens, and prescribing to other people that when you date someone, it has to go this way. Like, people are really complicated, and stuff happens, and it's, you know, it's complex, and the nuance of life interacts with everything. And so I just up front, I think it's worth saying that, you know, I just feel like it's really unhelpful to try and prescribe anything to anyone, especially in the world of dating. But in all things faith related, so that's not what we're trying to do here.
No way. Yeah. No way. And Jonty, when I said to, we made this big announcement after we made this announcement that we were getting engaged at my home in Sydney, and our friends thought I must have fallen pregnant. They were sure that it was just like a quick shotgun, let's get this shit rolling. There's no way she would be marrying this dude from America. She doesn't even know him. And, you know, nearly at 34 years later, we're still rolling along. And I've shared in my podcasts all the bumps along the way that we've had, you know. But the first date was pretty powerful, actually. My first date with Rob. Oh, my hubba hubba. Oh, can I share it?
Absolutely. I'm dying for these stories.
21. My girlfriend had said to me, what we're going to do is we're going to Disneyland, and I'm a Disneyland freak, total mental Mickey Mouse chick. And I finally get to go to my first trip to Disneyland, and Melinda says to me, but we need to be on the freeway heading to San Diego by 3 o'clock because we need to be down there to meet Frank and Frank's new flatmate, Rob. And I said, oh, two scientists. Oh, my God. Poke my eyes out. This is just going to be a nightmare. You're asking me to leave freaking Mickey Mouse to go and hang out with some scientists. I was an actor. I didn't want to be with these scientists. Frank was like in his 30s. I was 21 and full of energy and excited and just wanted to be on the bloody Cinderella float myself on Main Street. Anyway, we head off down to San Diego. I had the shits, and we turn up at Frank's place, and we walk in. I meet Frank, and Rob is on the phone to his mum in Kentucky. And Rob and I clocked eyes, and there was this thing that happened. It was just a thing. And I was not expecting a thing. It was not something I had thought I was signing up for on any level. I had a lovely boyfriend home in Sydney. And then we went out for, you know, margaritas and fajitas and a great Mexican dinner in San Diego, Old Town. And that was our first date. And it was just fireworks. We had very little in common except the gym. We both were right into the gym, and Rob was doing his PhD and I was a fresh actor. Soldier on, buddy.
Soldier on, baby. Yeah,
that's the one. And it was just like fireworks. It was the best date ever. He never held my hand. He never kissed me. I never felt any part of his skin against me, nothing. We just had dinner and had the loveliest night with Melinda and Frank, the four of us. It was beautiful. It was my favourite date ever. Ever.
Awesome. Well, in contrast to that.
Yeah.
I think the main one that I thought would be funny to share on this podcast from my experience was a first date that was not good. And I feel like I'm telling this story because I'm still actually pretty good friends with this person. I don't think it was ever actually going to work in a romantic sense anyway, but I think we had to sort of try, and then we were like, yeah, no, that was weird. Let's not do that again. As people who listen to this podcast will be shocked to hear me bring up again, I'm a massive movie nerd. And I had, I was in year 10, so I was 15 or 16. I don't remember exactly when, but I knew that this new film called Gone Girl was coming out. And I was I still am a big fan of that director, David Fincher. And so I was like, I asked this girl out on a date. She said, yes, really excited. And she's like, oh, what do you want to do? I was like, oh, there's this, if you're not into it, we don't have to do this, but there's this movie coming out called Gone Girl. I knew nothing about this movie other than I liked the director and that it was a thriller, and I hadn't read the book. Turns out that the movie is about how absurd male and female relationships and marriages are, and it's all awful, and we seduce each other into relationships by fronting with masks and projections of who we want them to think that we are. And then you find yourself in a marriage, and 5 years later, the masks are off and you turn around and you hate the other person and marriage is a sham, right? That's kind of that's one layer of what Gone Girl's about. So automatically going on a first date, age 16, to go and see this movie. I mean, I love the film, but it's not a good date movie unless your date's cool and you want to talk about that sort of stuff together. Cut to like three quarters of the way through the movie, there's this really graphic sex scene that ends, spoiler alert, in someone pulling out a box cutter and slashing the other person's throat. And it's this very, very uncomfortable sequence with nudity and sex and then violence and blood. And so you can imagine the sort of stunned silence when the credits rolled. And I'm thinking like, damn, that was a really great movie. I also should not have brought this person with me to watch it. And we still sort of like, I catch up with this person occasionally. We laugh about it because we're friends.
That's hilarious.
But yeah, would not recommend going to see that movie as a date movie. Not good. Not good.
Not cool. I've got another one. Yeah, I've got a horror one. Beautiful Boyfriend. One that I thought I really loved. 15. He had a car. I must have been in year 9 and he was in like in year 11. Or year 11 or year 12. That's when you get your license, don't you? And there's this lookout at Thompson's Corner at Pennant Hills. And somehow we got Mum's permission to go driving in the car after dark. I can't even begin to think how Mum let that be a thing. And we drove up to Thompson's Corner. I had no idea where we were going. And he motioned to get into the back of the car, into the back seat of the car, and pulled his pants down.
Oh, no.
Pulled his pants down. And then took the back of my head and pushed my head down. And I, at that point, I hadn't seen, only in child abuse and my dad running up the hallway from the shower, I hadn't seen anyone else's penis at that point. And I, fittingly, as my coffee cup says, I just froze. I absolutely froze. And I went into a trauma response. In that moment, and it's like I seemed to know what to do, which was most interesting, probably from my child abuse. And I remember just freezing in that moment and wanting to survive the moment. And once it was all over, I don't even actually remember it being over. I never had sex. My clothes were completely on. Once he did his thing, I just remember wiping my hands and getting back into the front of the car and not even actually talking about it. Him lighting up a cigarette and driving home. And I remember feeling just post-traumatic after that. And I don't know if other people feel like that after their first, you know, sexual experience, but I was left feeling like that. And so that was not such a great date. And I really liked this guy. I dated him for a while. He was just a beautiful person, and he was just doing probably what he thought you do when you're 17 and a bloke, you know, with somebody that he really liked. I believe he really liked me a lot.
Yeah, interesting. Because to me, that is more so than just don't do anything sex related. I think the Bible actually talks a lot about sex and sexuality and intimacy when it's based on, like, if it's transactional or if it's based on power or just wanting something from the other person, that's what it describes as being harmful. I think to me that's a story of exactly that. I'm sure he was. I mean, I don't know this person, but that's a whole other conversation about And I can definitely speak to this perception of what guys are meant to do on dates. Mm. Those cultural, like those, that messaging runs pretty deep. And I've been on dates where afterwards they've said to me, "Oh, I thought we were going to do X, Y, or Z, but you didn't initiate." And I was like, "Oh, was I meant to?" Because I was so thinking through in my head, like, I've seen portrayed the creepy dude on a date so in so many different places that that's not what I want it to be. So that's a really interesting story.
And mum used to, as I got older, and I remember being sort of 18 and going to Sheila's nightclub at North Sydney in Berry Street. It was like a really cool nightclub. You can Google it. It was like a really cool place in the 80s, like a disco. And mum giving me $25. And $25 back in the 80s was a ton of money. I reckon it was probably like giving me $100. And she said to me, "Use this money not to buy drinks, but to be able to catch a taxi home, because you don't want to be able, you don't, after you've been out and you're having dancing with boys, you don't want to have to rely on somebody to give you a lift home. You want to be able to get yourself home independently." And she always gave me $25 for that. And I just remember thinking how grateful I was for that, because I felt like she was obviously keeping me safe. And many times it did. It really did keep me safe, because even if I'd had a few glasses of wine, I could ring a taxi. We didn't have Ubers back then, and I would ring a taxi and get myself home. $25 from North Sydney all the way back to North Epping. That's telling you, that's about $100. There you go.
Yeah, there you go.
It'd be about $100, wouldn't it? Yeah. Yeah. So that was very generous of her to do that. Even if I wasn't on a date with a bloke, and if things turned pear-shaped, mum said always use it. Mm. Yeah. So dates can go pear-shaped, can't they?
Yeah. Yeah, they definitely can. I think I'm lucky. I haven't been on any that have gone really bad in the sense that you're talking about. But I know plenty of friends who've had dates, male friends too. I think there's a misconception that unwanted, attempted intimacy come just from guys. I mean, it often does, but it comes in the other direction.
Chicks,
as well.
Oh, 100%. I reckon 100%. I always remember feeling on a date that there was always this pressure to put out if they'd paid for a meal or you'd gone out somewhere flash, that you would kind of have to have sex with them if they had paid. So, again, mum always used to say to me, always say you'll go halves or even offer to pay for the meal so that you don't feel obliged to have to have sex if you don't want to. And I thought that was pretty modern parenting, really. And so I often would pay so that I wouldn't have to feel that sense of obligation. Isn't that fucked up? That I would think that if somebody likes me enough to invite me out for dinner, that it signaled a blowjob. Do you know what I mean? Mm. How sad is that? That is so freaking sad. Mm. Breaks my heart to think that that's what I thought back then. I thought that little of myself, you know?
Mm. And I wonder, like, my brain's like trying to peel that apart. Like, is that a cultural thing, or is it like an upbringing thing, or is it there's so many layers to where that comes from, right? And I know that that's not an isolated thing that just you probably felt. And I know that that's not a thing that doesn't happen anymore either.
Yeah.
Because I've had conversations with people about that exact same thing, like today. Mm.
I think it's a power imbalance thing, isn't it? Mm. You know? And then I had this date with this boy once, and he was so lovely. And he was just a lovely friend from the gym. And he took me to a very fancy restaurant in the city, picked me up and took me into town. And we had this lovely dinner and then drove me home, kissed my hand as he let me out of the car, and then I went inside And Mum said to me, how did the night go? I said, it was really great. But he didn't want to fuck me, Mum. What's wrong? He mustn't like me very much. But how fucked up is that, Jonty? And it wasn't that at all. He was just really respectful, a really respectful guy who did want to see me again. And I think, oh, my God, how did I get that so wrong? Maybe that's a part of my training, how I was conditioned as a young person, what I was, the messaging I was told, because clearly not the messaging you've been told. And I wonder how many other young women in the 80s felt like that, or the 90s or the 2000s, or do girls still feel like that? I don't know.
I do love the idea that that guy thought that he was being slick. They gave me a little kiss on the hand.
Kissed my, literally opened my door, kissed my hand and walked me down the pathway. Yeah. But I remember thinking that was like out of a movie. That really, I felt, a part of me thought, this is so lovely. Any moment he's going to stick his tongue in my mouth, and it never happened. But then I was left thinking, what's wrong with me? Because he didn't want to. Like, that's dumb. How sad is that, Jonty?
It is. Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah.
Probably speaks more to my trauma and how I thought of myself back then.
Well, and it's a, you know, if I can speak from the outside looking in, that's a warped idea of how power and expectation plays into sexuality, I think, from hearing that for the first time. And even the idea that the guy has to initiate, I think often I have felt the weight of expectation sometimes. Even in a relationship, not even if you've, I mean, that's a whole other thing. Like, when is it no longer dating and when are you in a for real relationship and that whole thing to navigate. But like, even in a relationship, I often feel like culturally the weight of expectation is on, and we're talking as straight heterosexual people, not even entering into that conversation of, but broadly in heterosexual relationships, the weight of expectation is on the male to initiate things with the female. That's not the way things should be or the way that things are, but culturally that's often how that is represented and how those messages, particularly if you like in films or in TV shows or in even like just pop music, I mean, that's largely different now for the better, I think.
And women these days can be far more sexually aggressive. I think it's deemed to be, it's a part of this hypersexualization that's out there in our world these days. Women are very sexually provocative, whereas in my growing up, they weren't, I would imagine. And I think that's coming off that Victorian era. If I think about, my mother was raised by a mother that was that Victorian, post-Victorian era, born in the early 1900s. I've been watching Bridgerton while I've been sick, watching reruns of that. And to go on a date was almost scandalous. They had to have a chaperone on a date back then. And there was physical touch was not even a thing. He might take your hand to get out of the carriage, or you might link arms when you walked. There was no physical contact whatsoever. And your chaperone was privy to the entire conversation back in the day, you know, so that there would be no impropriety whatsoever on either part, male or female.
I have an interesting story that kind of speaks into that a little bit. I think I alluded to it last week, I think, about being approached by someone in a bar. And this was, I think, pretty confronting for me because this was a lot to do with exactly that, to do with like the guy is the one that initiates, right? Not true. It was like probably 1 o'clock in the morning in a bar. I'd been out to a show with some friends, I think there were two or three of us left that were still raging on. We're in a bar in Newtown at like, I don't know. I don't think I got home that night until about 4 o'clock in the morning. So it was late. And I realize I'm chatting with some friends and a couple of other people that we met at the show that there's someone like over my friend's shoulder who's trying to make direct eye contact with me. And I notice it. I'm like, okay, that's weird. Are they actually making eye contact with me, or are they looking at someone else? I'm like, no. Okay. She walks past eventually and says, "Hey, can I buy you a drink?" And me being polite, I said, "Thank you. I've still got one going. Thank you though. Appreciate it. No worries." She walks away. 20 minutes later, she comes back with two drinks and gives one to me. And just through timing, I don't know whether she was smart enough to have timed it for when my two mates, one had gone to the bar, the other had gone to the bathroom, but okay. I'm there at the table by myself. She sits down and gives me a drink, and she said something along the lines of like, "Are you too nervous or something?" And I was like, "Nah, I was just chilling with my friends." I'm flattered, but like, my friends then throw me under the bus by, they come back and say that I'm sitting with this girl who's just brought me a drink, and they don't come and sit back down. They go somewhere else. Long story short, she is a capital S Satanist.
Whoa.
And not in the like popular depictions of what Satanism is like, is kind of bullshit. Satanism in the sense that it's, I'm not even going to try to describe exactly what it is, but it's all about rejecting the need for higher power to influence your life and to bring positivity into your life. And it's like all about the empowerment of the self and the rejection of anything other than what you have inside you, right? Gets to the point where she's like, "Oh, what do you do for work?" I'm like, "Fucking hell, this is going to be a nightmare." And I go, "I actually work for the church." And so we ended up having this really wild conversation where she's like, "Oh, you know, that's all bullshit, right?" And I was like, "Well,
wow.
What do you want me to say?" And she's like looking, she like grabs my wrist as well and is like looking me dead in the eye and saying things like, "You know, this entire world is run by Christians and they're all pedophiles and they're all bullshit. They're going to drag this world into an early grave." It gets super intense. And I'm trying to like look over and make eye contact with my mates, like, "Get the fuck back out of here, please." Because also, we've been drinking all night, so my mind isn't as sharp as it usually is. So I'm not at my peak in terms of like making judgments in this conversation. She was like implying that she wanted to go home with me, and I was like, "No, I'm good. I've got a lift." Thanks. I'm also terrified a little bit, but she's like, "Okay, well, here's my number." And she grabbed my hand and wrote her phone number on my hand, but in the process also put like a hair tie around my wrist.
Oh.
And then gave me, and I lost it. I'm so sad that I lost it because it's a really funny, I wish I still had it, a wooden upside down cross pendant thing that would clip onto a necklace.
Wow.
And then I made eye contact with my friends. I was like, "Get the fuck back over here." She goes off. I never see her again. But then I wake up at like 2 o'clock the next afternoon. I roll out of bed and I'm like, have a slow brekkie and whatever, and roll up to church that evening. And I'm like, "Did that actually happen? Or am I just like,
did I dream it?
Yeah, did I dream this?" But then I look down and I've got this hair tie around my wrist. I'm like, "Oh, fuck, that did happen." And I realize that I've lost the little cross that she gave me.
Oh.
So strictly, not a dating story, but that was a pretty wild thing that happened to me.
It's a hit-on story.
Yeah.
Massive hit-on story.
Which I think is hilarious now. But I think I was not even 20 at the time.
Wow.
I was super intimidated by just how forward this person was.
Yeah. Sexually aggressive too, hey.
Yeah, yeah, not even being subtle about it.
No.
which, you know, what's the saying? Nothing good happens after midnight.
Nothing. That's, but and yeah. I would say, from as a God botherer, Satan loves to prowl around in events like that. That's just like classic, isn't it?
It's interesting as well. Like, I don't think that what she describes as Satanism has anything to do with the Satan that we recognize as part of the Christian faith.
Interesting.
That's a whole other topic that maybe we could get into at some point on the podcast. And
like definitely.
What cultural Satanism actually is.
Yes.
It's very interesting. And as a big fan of lots of really dark, heavy music, a lot of those subcultures where that music comes out of in the 90s and the early 2000s and even a bit before that, comes out of subcultures of Satanism and anti-religious groups. So there's a really interesting history of where that actually branches away from strictly religion and into more of a cultural movement. All that is to say, that got dumped on me in a bar at 1 o'clock in the morning in Newtown.
What an experience.
It's pretty wild.
That's a good one, Jonty. That's a good one. That's one for the kids.
Oh, yeah, I'll definitely be telling my kids that one when they're old enough. Yeah. Now, remember, if you go out drinking.
That's right. Have we milked this dating thing?
I think we've done a pretty good job. I think to come full circle, I guess, I wanted to talk really briefly, and we talked about this before on a previous episode, but where purity comes into this, and just to dispel this idea that a Christian ethic around dating is all around this idea of sexual purity. I think we mentioned the chewing gum analogy, or the chocolate bar analogy. If you engage in, depending on which denominational sect that you ask or with different theologies, engaging in any number of different sexual practices, whether or not they're explicitly sexual, ends up in you being, instead of a fresh wrapped piece of chewing gum, you're now a pre-chewed piece of chewing gum, and a potential marriage partner is, you've lost your worth before that person and before God because you've, you know, your piece of gum has been chewed. It's a really gross analogy. Or the chocolate bar, or the sticky tape. Every time you stick a piece of sticky tape to something and pull it off again, it becomes less sticky, right? And I guess to use this platform as a place to say, like, that's
bullshit.
Well, not to say that it's not biblical, because there is, like, you can find biblical reasoning for just about anything, but there are other biblical stances on dating, and there are other biblical stances on sexual ethic, and not to be feel like you've been cornered into any particular ethic around dating by any one religious school of thought, you know what I mean?
I think any act of connectedness with another human that leaves you feeling less than great, that leaves you feeling shameful or hurt in any way, or physically hurt or emotionally hurt, can't be good for us, right? Yeah.
And trust your gut.
Any date that goes pear-shaped in any of that sense, can't be good for us. So you'd want to stay away from that kind of thing, wouldn't you? And like you say, just trust your own moral compass, you know?
Yeah.
Listen to your parents if they're good ones. They've usually got, you know, pints of wisdom.
Yeah, they've been there.
They have. That's right. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, well, I think that pretty much does it for that main segment. I don't think I have any other major horror stories. I have some embarrassing stories, but I think I've top trumped all of them with that last story. Well, let's dive over to gratitude now.
Yeah.
We'll be right back. So it's my turn for gratitude. I'm not going to lie, I've had a pretty rough couple of weeks. I was sitting there thinking, like, oh, I've got to be grateful for something. I'm not grateful for anything right now. This is bullshit. But I forced myself to, and I think it's a really good exercise to do that if you're not feeling particularly thankful for anything at any particular time. And so I guess something I'm really grateful for at the moment is comedy, because I am a big comedy fan. I love watching stand-up comedy, and particularly when you're not in a great mood, just watching something that makes you laugh is always good. But I actually have this here, which wasn't even planned, but I can do some show and tell. I've been reading, one of my favorite comedians is a comedian called Tom Segura, and he recently released a book, which I've been reading, and I have it right here in front of me. And it's so funny, but also so genuine and so authentic to the shitty day-to-day experience that is living on this fucking planet. Shit heap of a rock. Yeah. Yeah, so I think I'm particularly grateful in weeks like the last week or so that I've had that I have books like that I can read and just laugh, but also go, yeah, the world's shitty, but like it's shitty for everyone, so just grow up, get on
certainly
with it.
Is. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, my mum used to say to me, some days are diamonds and some days are not. And so you've had a bunch of not diamond days, baby. Yeah, that's right. I think we go through life, don't we, Jonty? And we often think that there's something wrong when the days aren't diamonds. Mm. And we think, oh, fuck, there's something wrong here because it's not a great day, or I'm not feeling great about life and it's a bit rocky right now. Actually, I think that's just life, you know, and I think the diamond days are the rare jewels that happen, as you say, on this rock. And they pop up and then we need to go, yay, that was a good one. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. And we don't recognize those diamond days unless we also experience the shitty ones.
Yeah, 100%. Isn't that the truth?
I'm totally riffing here. This was not planned, but there's a line here in this book. His dad asked him if he knew what happens after someone dies. And he says, what? And then his answer is, the world goes on. And I feel like that's such a good, like, I think we've talked about this before. We were talking about the Book of Job. It might have been in the Heaven is for Real episode. Stuff happens, but in the grand scheme of the timeline of the world, it literally doesn't matter. The world goes on and you just need to get up and keep going.
That's right. I remember Jonty, after I'd given birth to Ginger, and I remember then that day thinking to myself, the whole world doesn't know that Ginger's been born today. But there's other things that have happened in the world on the news right now, and they don't know that Ginger has been born. Oh my God, the world doesn't know about this right now. Like, I wanted the world just to stop in that moment, you know? And that was a beautiful moment in my life. But the same for when a horrific thing happens. You know, not everybody knows that horrific thing is happening for you right now. The world just continues to roll again in another 24-hour cycle, doesn't it? And it just goes on. We just pick ourselves up, dust ourselves off and go, maybe tomorrow's going to be a diamond.
Mm. And, you know, having a laugh along the way certainly helps.
Kissing ourselves along the way, laughing our guts out.
Yeah.
Definitely helps.
I think that's like one of the very few things that everyone has in common is that shitty things happen. But at the same time, most of the time, those shitty things are also hilarious. Whether it may not feel hilarious when you're in the middle of it, but when you look back on it, there's usually something absurd, something ridiculous, something objectively pretty funny about it that you can laugh about.
Jonty, I've never told anybody about the back of John's car story with the box of tissues until today.
Mm.
I haven't told anybody. And now I can piss myself laughing about that. Like, I just think that's so funny. And, you know, that was such a long time ago. You're exactly right. But at the time, it felt like trauma on steroids, you know. Now it's like, oh, my God, that's bloody hilarious.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. So that's my gratitude for this week. And I think that wraps it up for us today, which is exciting because that was, I think we've done 9 or 10 episodes in this series, which I don't know how you felt about it, but I thought it was pretty scary at the start to even these conversations, let alone record them.
So brave.
Yeah. I don't know what order the next few are going to be coming out in, but I will say that we've got some pretty exciting guests lined up. So you can look forward to that. And also we are going to be talking about The Exorcist, which I think I've mentioned a couple of times before. But reminder, we're going to be talking about that. We're also going to be talking about just more broadly, like the nature of evil and the demonic and how we feel about all those sorts of things. So don't feel like if you don't want to put yourself through a horror movie, that's fine. The conversation is going to be a little bit broader than just specifically talking about the film. But I encourage people to try and seek out the movie over the next, could be next week, could be the week after, who knows? We'll see what happens. Yeah, I'm really excited for that one. I know you are too, Ness.
Yeah, I really am. I've got some good stories. My own personal journey, having survived being in a satanic group of people, and what that left me with, and also experiences in ministry with the satanic. It's really very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm nothing super we should be scared about. It's really, it's fascinating. It's just fascinating. I'm excited.
Yeah. Until then, this has been Filthy Hope with the final episode of Love, Sex and Jesus. We could well re-enter this space later on. We have a guest lined up that I'm really excited about. We're going to be talking about purity culture and a few of those things as well. But for now, we'd love to hear if you have any thoughts or questions or stories or just things you want to talk to us about after this series. So feel free to get in touch. All the socials, email address, wherever you want to hit us up. We'd love to hear from you.
I'm Ness.
And I'm Jonty, and this was Filthy Hope. We'll see you next week.